It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
You know, in some ways, I'm not sure how to talk about what happened yesterday, because the first three quarters, I've seen a lot of that. A lot of people who have been here for a while have seen the first three quarters of Texas football happen. You've seen a just absolute crap performance where you know your team is a bigger problem than the other team actually having success. I've seen that. I'm comfortable talking about that because I've been here since 2002 when I moved from California. I've been here since the inception of the team. So there's been a lot of bad football on Sundays where the team, no matter what the expectations are, somehow fall below them. And then the fourth quarter happens, and I have to try to decipher what the deal was. How did Davis Mills put those many drives together? And I'm talking about drives. I'm not talking about a 60-yard bomb where Nico gets loose or Woody Marks breaks off a 70-yard touchdown run. Or maybe you get a pick six to put you back in the game. That's what the Jags took advantage of early. Turnovers, mistakes on special teams to get them into a spot where they had a commanding lead. What the Texans did was overcome their own mistakes inside those drives, convert third and longs consistently to go score touchdowns, and eventually put themselves in the spot where Davis Mills can lead a 90-plus yard touchdown drive for the win. And even that drive started with two bad plays on first and second down, and then he hits Dalton Schultz on what you might call a crosser or a short cross, one-on-one against the linebacker. Alua Khan is one of the guys the Jags paid a couple off seasons ago now. He has no business one-on-one against Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz has had a nice game, made the touchdown catch earlier, but it's third and 10 for a Jags team who didn't pressure or get a sack on Davis Mills. They certainly didn't get a sack in that fourth quarter. You should not have your middle linebacker, run support linebacker on Dalton Schultz. So the Texans and Davis Mills took advantage of it, and then they got their drive going. They were able to run the football on that drive, pretty much run it down the Jags' throat, and they're going to run into the end zone until some Texans issues popped up that we will discuss. But overall, you fight back after all the mistakes early, and in some ways, particularly for people who have belief that this can still be a playoff season, you save your season. You know, if you're 3-6, you're done for. Now you're 4-5, and there's an expectations that you go on the road and beat the Titans, and then you get to 5-5. I don't have the assumed expectations that you're going to win that game. It lays out where you should, but who knows? We just had a what the hell just happened moment yesterday, so who's to say the Titans don't rise up? But at least right now, you're 4-5, and you certainly will go in there feeling pretty good about yourself. We still wonder about the health of C.J. Stroud. He was not on the sidelines, and I bring it up because I saw Titus Howard standing on the sidelines. He also missed a game because of a concussion. So I don't know if that's just C.J.'s preference not to stand out there, or maybe there's more of a concern about him being in lights, because sometimes the lights will hurt your head if you're recovering from a concussion. So we'll see where he stands. Certainly, DeMeco will probably get asked about him today. And if he's out there at practice, great. But if not, at least you know Davis Mills had one in him. question is, can he, if he has to, can he string a couple games together? And maybe he won't need to be as great as he was in the fourth quarter because you play better. So bringing up Davis Mills, his touchdown run after he gets away from Walker, who beats, was it Trent Brown clean? After he beats him clean, but he outruns him to the end zone for the winning score. Is it the most unlikely touchdown you could think of? Look, I'm not talking about the most unlikely touchdown you've ever seen. I'm not talking about that because we've seen crazy ones before.
But just if before the play starts.
If I tell you how the Texans are going to overcome a third and long, but it was actually third and goal, but outside their own 10-yard line, and if I said Davis Mills is going to outrun Walker and then run into the end zone pretty much untouched, is that the most unlikely touchdown I could have dreamed up?
It was so unlikely that Ian Eagle was like, can you believe it? Was like the least likely. Like he, in the call, he was like, this is incredible. Well, what just happened? Davis Mills. Wow.
I'm not sure Davis Mills actually knew that he was going to scramble.
I think he was like,
he was like, wait a minute. This, I think what got him going certainly got to the outside, but when he saw initially that Woody Marks was running to draw the DB away and the DB didn't react, okay, he goes, now I got a shot. I don't know that Davis Mills knew he was going to get in until he's like probably at the 3-yard line. He goes, at some point someone's going to catch me, right? Some Jag's going to peel off and catch me.
Looking behind
him. And then we've got like a fourth and goal to win it. It just so happens that he had enough juice to get in. I don't know if the Jags are exhausted. That might have played a part because no Jag, I mean, until he was at the goal line, got close. He was pulling away from Walker, and the linebackers and the safeties who were covering could not get off a Texan receiver to go make a play. It wasn't in slow motion, but I watched it and thought to myself, at some point someone's going to close on him, right? And no one did. He was able to get there and win the game. Of course, sequence of events, the Jags had a shot, but because they were atrocious pretty much the entire fourth quarter, and really, they weren't good offensively all game. We can get into the Texans and how they set the Jags up to get out to a big lead, but the Jags, with their one total yard of offense in the fourth quarter, they still had a shot, and with Cam Little, anywhere inside 60 yards feels like there's a real chance, and they were well within it on, I think, the play to Parker Washington that got called back because of hands to the face. So with all of what was going on, the remarkable Texans comeback, the defense and Danielle Hunter wrecking shop, and we'll hear from Davis Mills about what Danielle Hunter said to him, the Jags were in a position to win the game, but they self-destructed one more time. And the margins are very small, man, in college and the NFL, because if not for the hands to the face, the Jags probably win the game. If we go back to Saturday, if Fernando Mendoza's pick, or at least tip ball, was picked off with a Penn State defender who just could not get his feet squared away to get to the ball, that ball falls harmlessly to the ground, and then they win the game on a great catch. These small things that determine who's going to win a game. Now you've got a Heisman moment for Mendoza, and Davis Mills has a memory that's going to last probably his entire life, And because the Jags could not block Will Anderson, I believe, without getting their hand in his face, now the Texans are 4-5 as opposed to a likely 3-6 because Cam Little's knocking that ball through if he gets an opportunity. He just didn't get the opportunity because the Jags continued to make the same mistakes they had made for the better part of a quarter and a half, really since the middle of the third. Actually, late in the third quarter they scored that touchdown, but after that point it was all Texans. So the Texans did the little things right, and they made big plays on third down. And they go in there, at least stay home and win a game against a team that is not good. Look, we watched the Jags the first time. The Jags aren't a good football team. They're more a beneficiary of their schedule, why they're in the spot they're at, looking to go to 6-3. But when it comes down to it, that win keeps the Texans now within a game of the wild card. The Chiefs did not play. They're 5-4. The Jags are 5-4. And it's congested right now for that final spot. And that's what they're shooting for. With the Colts and what they did the morning of Sunday when they came back and beat the Falcons, it's all about that last wild card spot. And some way, somehow, they're still in it. So it's a day of positives. It felt like we were going to take shots at everything they were doing up until that fourth quarter. Why is City Sal playing football for you? Well, your special teams and Frank Ross, what's going on there? And yet, a 26-0 fourth quarter? Was that the final score? 29-10.
Yes.
29-10 was the score when the Jags were at their highest as far as their lead in the game. The Texans put them away with a big man touchdown by Sheldon Rankins on a, it would have been a strip sack, I guess, but it turns into a pick six, and the Texans go on and their season very much alive. So we'll hear from a lot of people involved in that one. It's going to be a lot about how they kept believing in themselves, and credit to them, because if I didn't believe, the fans at home and at the stadium didn't believe.
I was at LeBurge and Lake Charles, and at the start of the third quarter, I was like, all right. Or the start of the fourth quarter, I was like, all right, I can leave. I don't have to stay for the extra quarter to watch this one. And then I just started getting alerts as I was on the road, like, what's happening? I even saw the, like, Davis Mills scrambles for a touchdown to make it, whatever, 30-29. I was just like, wait, he scrambled for 15 yards? Like, what?
And it was and the things that came before it were two false start penalties. And you're like,
well,
okay.
That was good.
That was like, oh.
No, well, had to back him up a little.
No, or you could have just run it into the end zone, which felt like very likely considering how they had run the ball on that drive. And then they pulled.
Got to give Davis Mills his Vince Young moment.
Give him his moment, sure. But it was. The Texans were doing so much good on that drive, and then they just reverted back to who they had been the entire year.
I feel like that's why at least our tone isn't going to be Texans back, because for all but like three drives, it seemed like, oh, yeah, this is just the same Texans team we've seen. And even on the game-winning drive, even the first touchdown in the fourth quarter, Davis Mills, like, tried to throw an interception while he was throwing the ball away. He just, like, Newsom was the only guy kind of close, and he missed it because he had to break, like, pretty far back for it. But I was like, I was watching it back already knowing the outcome, and I was like, I can't believe he almost just, like, the comeback doesn't happen if he just throws that interception.
And that's the thing. The Texans weren't perfect on the way back. It's just the Jags are so bad that even when the Texans were trying to do things that a better team would take advantage of and close them out, like 3rd and 10 inside you're snapping the ball inside your 10-yard line. A good team gets a stop against the Texans there. A good team probably doesn't have a Luakon type linebacker covering Dalton Schultz one-on-one. But the Jags are a mess. And credit to Davis Mills for standing in there. I don't even think he was able to step into it to throw. There was a little push from the Jags one of the few times they got any type of rush in the fourth quarter, and he made the throw. But good teams make plays to win games. The Jags didn't, and the Texans took full advantage of it on their way to the second biggest comeback in team history.
Yeah, it really doesn't happen without the Jags. Just rough math looking at the play-by-play here. Fourth quarter time of possession, 3 minutes before the last drive, which was 30 seconds. So that, I feel like, plays a huge part in the fact that they just couldn't stop the run, couldn't stop Davis Mills because their defense was on the field for the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah, that pass rush.
They had two 3-and-outs.
I don't know if it was just tired, but the pass rush really disappeared. And give credit to the likes of Trent Brown and Ursary for holding up against the unit who had dominated different players, because there have been injuries since the first game against the Jags. But that was a unit that won the game for the Jags. The final pass from CJ, it was a pick because he was harassed by the Jags defensive front, and it turned what could have been maybe a big play to what Kirk, maybe a first down, maybe a touchdown, into a pick that ended the game. Those guys held up in pure drop back situations better than I thought they could, particularly against a unit that did what they wanted to do against them in the first game. So that's a Texans win, a surprising one. Going in, I didn't think they had much of a chance considering their offensive line issues, And the way that offensive line started, it looked like a game where they were going to get their quarterback beat up. I thought to myself, you know, CJ's lucky he's not playing in this game, because I don't know if Davis Mills is going to survive it, considering how much chaos was going on around him early. But they found some answers. Most of those answers involved not playing City Sal anymore, which, as I said on a different day, we would ask some questions about how the hell did he win the job in practice and be so bad that you had to go back, get away from him. I know. Doesn't matter. 4-5, third
got
place
the
in AFC
split
South.
Against the Jags.
Yeah. I get. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
3-1, Davis Mills against the Jags.
Yeah, he's a. Was he?
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Was he? Yes, you did. Was he 6-19 going in, or was he 6-19 afterwards as a starter and 3-1 against the Jags? Or was that the stats going into the game?
That might have been going.
Is he now like 4-1 against the Jags? I forgot. There are a lot of stats about.
He's 3-1 against the Jags.
Okay, that's official.
That. Yeah.
But he, of course, because he started during the Cully and the Smith era, wasn't a lot of positive moments for Davis Mills. No.
They showed like when he first. When the Texans first went on the offense and they had like Davis Mills starting quarterback, they showed his career passing yards. I was stunned. He has 62 career passing yards. I was like, I guess he was the starter for 2 years, yeah. But that still seems a bit aggressive for Davis Mills.
Yeah, 6,200 plus passing yards coming in, and he's now 16-19-1 as a starter, 6-18 coming into this and one going into the game, and looked for all the world to be, or he was 5-8. 5-19-1 going in. He looked for all the world to be going to 5-20-1 instead.
Left him too much time.
So Davis Mills has...
Can't leave the door open for Davis Mills like that.
I saw a lot of doors open in his first two years.
The other 25 starts? Yeah.
It didn't matter. But he's got two big... not his last couple starts, because he had a couple starts when they just sat CJ. But he's got a couple big wins on his resume. The win to get CJ Stroud here.
Yep.
And then yesterday afternoon where... He was the best offensive player on the field in the fourth quarter. 180 yards to one, I think, was the differential in the offenses in that fourth quarter, where the Texans did anything they wanted and the Jags could do nothing. So you get a win. Love it. You're 4-5. Season's still on. And what that means, maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow as far as what on means. But at least you're not 3-6. And actually having questions about, where's our draft pick? Because Tankathon was going to make an appearance today if they had lost. And they were well on their way, but they
up until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but it did not happen. They did not lose, so we don't have to focus on Tankathon today. That can be saved. Probably beat the Titans, too, if we're just assuming. Yeah. So maybe we put that
on ice till December,
in our back pocket until December, sure. Credit to them. We'll hear from Davis Mills when we come back. What he was going through, what he heard from one of his teammates. We haven't not talked about Danielle Hunter. He spoke to Davis Mills, and Danielle Hunter was your best defender. Dominated that Jags offensive line. Whenever it was a pure drop back and he can get after the passer, he made his acquaintances with Trevor Lawrence quite a bit. He was like, "Hey, Trevor, remember me? Let's meet again." And he kept doing that throughout. For his 3.5 sacks, could have been 4. So, Danielle Hunter, your defensive MVP. Davis Mills, your offensive MVP. We'll hear what the defensive MVP said to the offensive MVP when we come back. Big win. Keeps your season alive. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Urlea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Urlea.
So let's hear from Davis Mills. He's a guy who, when I think about him, I think, hey, that's the guy who they chose Case Keenum over in that one game they really needed a couple years ago. And we played sound from him last week about that moment where he was passed over, and he talked about how it made him look at himself and go, hey, what am I doing? What am I putting out there for something like that to happen? And so they have kept him around since that point, and he is C.J. Stroud's clear backup. They've had the Grant, and Graham Mertz was standing on the sideline, and there was a flash of Graham Mertz at some point in the first half where it's like, oh, they think he might get pulled. That did not happen. Don't think there was any real chance of that happening unless it got to like 44, or maybe the score got so large they just wanted to pull Davis to not get him beat up.
But I think it was when Davis Mills put on the like arm sleeve, the like elbow sleeve, and they're like, you know, if you can't, you know, if this is too tricky, you know, he got Graham Mertz with his rookie debut patch on his shoulder. Well, didn't happen for our guy. I think Graham Mertz would have also led the comeback. I think that's fair to say.
It's a very positive view of Graham Mertz. I'll give you that. I'm not sure I agree. In fact, I know I don't agree. What am I saying?
I wouldn't have said Davis Mills could do it either.
Understood. You are playing the you don't know card.
Yeah. Daniil Hunter walk up to Graham Mertz and talk to him.
Does he know what Graham Mertz looks like?
He walks up to Nick Cayley and starts talking about his.
Who knows? Who knows how many guys actually know what Graham Mertz,
I'll be honest.
What Graham Mertz is, what position he plays, like. who is he? Who knows? If he doesn't have a jersey on, do people in that building know who Graham Mertz is by his face?
It's like the thing where they go undercover for like a prank during training camp or whatever.
Except Graham Mertz doesn't have to put on the Eli Manning makeup. He's just Graham Mertz and no one knows. But here's Davis Mills, and you'll hear him talk about what Danielle Hunter said to him as his mind was trying to work his way to bring him his team back.
I mean, I think the whole team had faith we were going to win that game the entire time. Like I said before, I mean, I think our team is very confident in our own abilities. We have a lot of players who can make plays, and we just needed to get things clicking. And as we went out there, I think we really only had, one possession in the third quarter. And went down, were able to drive the ball pretty well in the fourth quarter. And like I said before, defense kept finding ways to get off the field. Daniil was joking around with me in the locker room. He was like, our defense is good, man. And he was like, keep finding ways to go down and score points on offense, and that we're going to keep getting you guys the ball back. So having that in the back of my head and being able to trust the guys around me, especially on the other side of the ball, to go out there and make plays, I mean, it was just a hard-fought win. It was fun.
Yeah, so at the end of into two quarters, it was 20-10. The Texans had gotten a little momentum. They scored a touchdown, and then they picked off the Jags, the Derek Stingley play. We'll hear from Kamari Lassiter on Derek Stingley, the great one-handed interception. The Texans couldn't do anything with it. It was at the end of the half. Davis Mills got sacked when he ran out of bounds, and it was credited as a sack, and Trent Brown had the false start. Then they had the Hail Mary that Nico Collins caught, but was only the 7-yard line.
When that happened, I was like, this is going to look so good for everyone's numbers.
Yeah, it looks like Nico had a big day.
Yeah,
now, he made some big catches, but, I mean, the 54-yard Hail Mary certainly helped his numbers.
I was thinking, I was like, his price pick's just going to hit because of that. Like, boom, right there.
Yeah, in the second half, you heard Davis Mills talk about it. They gave up a field goal. That was the Jags' first drive of the second half where the Jags bogged down in the red zone. And then they had a 7-play drive that resulted in 18 yards. Not very efficient with the plays for the Texans.
That was Iowa football, right?
Yeah, well, Iowa got a big one against actually big loss. They had a chance to win that game against Oregon until Oregon drove down late and won the game. So, and they went for it on fourth down, and it was a good deflection by Jerrion Jones, who played a big part in that game. And then the Jags went down and scored a touchdown. It felt like not a lot of possession time, as you heard Davis Mills talk about. They just didn't have the football in the third quarter. And they were down 29-10, but it didn't crush them. They kept finding a way to put drives together in that fourth quarter.
Danielle Hunter was like, hey, we have a good defense, Davis Mills. Davis Mills was like, oh, yeah. You know what? Didn't think of it like that. It's not what everyone thinks about this team.
Yeah, I don't think Davis Mills, his mindset was, man, I mean, we really got to score because this defense blows. I think it was just a tough first half and, first three quarters.
It's not like they're like pressing because they're like, we can't put our defense on the field. I will say I was going to be very pissed off if they came close and
didn't win it
because of the first, 5 minutes of the game where they turned the ball over twice in immediate scoring position for the Jags. I mean, when the Jags were up at halftime, I was just like, I don't think the Jags have played well at all. Even, you know, late in the game when they're sitting, would they 29?
Yeah.
And they're standing at 29 points. I was like, man, this is really kind of like one of the worst. I was thinking it was one of the best days for the Houston offense. And I was like, kind of one of the worst days for the Houston defense. And I was like, wait, it wasn't that bad of a day for the Houston defense. It's just they got put in terrible spots to start the game.
Yeah, they gave up a total of 212 yards.
Yeah.
That's a great day defensively. And, of course, they had a punt return for a touchdown by Parker Washington.
Yep.
You had the fumble by Tremont Smith that set up points. So,
and then the interception on the first drive.
Yeah, these are a lot of short fields for the Jags. They had the one legitimate touchdown drive of about 60 yards or so. You're like, oh, okay, oof. This game's over. They go up 29-10, except it wasn't over. It's
never over when you have number 10.
Okay, sure. I didn't want to go into it, or at least come in today talking about all the Texans' mistakes, because they won a game in an unthinkable way, particularly with how the game started, as we laid out.
Yeah. Well, to me, it kind of says, like, the Texans weren't, like, the score was always out of whack with how they played.
Yes, it was.
Like, how the defense played.
Yeah.
It was like they got the worst possible first two possessions, other than, I guess, pick sixes.
The special teams failed them early.
Yeah.
Of course, the offense with the interception. It just led to, if they had lost the game, where it's another example of how the rest of the team is letting the defense down.
Yeah, they're close, man.
No. If they had lost the way it looked like it was going,
they would not be close.
It would just been a confirmation of all the things we've seen.
Take those 10 points down, they're only lost by 9 when they're down 29-10.
The first three quarters was everything we knew about this team just magnified, because it was just happening at an extreme rate, mm-hmm. where, as I mentioned, the Parker Washington thing, your defense is getting put in bad spots. They will make enough plays where if you could play anywhere competent with the other two groups, you would be in it. But the other two groups were failing miserably, and then they got their stuff together late. Credit to Matthew Wright for not missing a kick. We thank you for that.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to you.
Who was the former Jag?
Third star of the game. Star 1, Davis Mills. Star 2, Danielle Hunter. Star 3.
You really want hockey in this town, don't you?
I can't wait.
You can't wait for hockey here. I don't know if Matthew Wright gets a star, but I will give him credit for filling in and doing his job. He did his job, thankfully.
Or else we would have problems.
I don't know if Matthew Wright would have come up on their top five things of things that went wrong if he had missed a kick or two.
Thank God they started going for two.
there was little to no pressure on him at any point in the midst of the comeback.
Those extra points would have been scary.
Yeah, 29-10, they had to go for two. Yeah, 29-25, 29-24, because they went for two again. Yeah. He never had to make a kick. Did he make a kick in the fourth quarter? No attempts, right? Because they went for two every time, right?
I believe so. And then the last one, they didn't kick it.
Yeah. And of course, because the game was over. Did he have to kick? So Matthew Wright, he made the kicks when they mattered for him, mm-hmm. and didn't have to deal with it the rest of the game. So credit to him for doing his job. Yeah, he made a field goal early. And of course, he made a kick on their touchdown right before the half. And then they go for two. Yeah, never kicked in the second half.
That's how you do it, Matthew Wright.
Not even be a factor.
Don't kick.
Didn't kick the ball
Same
out of bounds
last week.
He didn't kick the ball out of bounds after any of the touchdowns, right?
That's true. And that's weirdly hard for these guys in the league. I don't know how.
Yeah, and particularly with the Texans, because they were having him direct kicks to the sideline, and he did that well. No missed kicks. Didn't have to be interviewed after the game like Kyme Fairbairn had to after the Seattle game. Lance is trying to start a quarterback controversy. What about a kicker controversy?
I don't know. I mean, we did mention that he didn't kick in the second half.
He didn't mess up any of the kickoffs. Sean. He didn't mess up any of the kickoffs.
He did all that he was asked to do.
What he was asked to do, he did well.
Yes.
Thank you.
I wish this was college football, where you could have a kickoff specialist.
There may be a lane for him if they give another roster spot.
Yeah, one extra roster spot.
Matthew Wright never screws up a kickoff. But jokes aside, he was filling in. He did his job. There are other guys filling in, like Trent Brown, who did their job. So
that was good. Four star.
There was a lot of talk before the comeback about how Nick Casario in this case, was going to have to answer questions about the constitution of his office line, how he put this thing together, because of how bad it started.
Yeah.
And then they settled on not having City Sal out there. Juice Scruggs filled in admirably. He had a good game. There's some numbers as far as how well the Texans blocked in the run game that I'll give you in comparison to what they've have been over the last couple of years. It all worked out. They gave up a couple sacks. It should have been a third, but Trevon Walker lands on Davis Mills. That was brutal. That hit was brutal. Thankfully for Davis Mills, he got up just fine.
Yeah, and maybe that's when they showed Graham Mertz, because that was one of those sacks where you can see coming. It wasn't even a blindside hit. It was just Davis Mills was looking the other way. But just on the TV shot, you're like, oh, boy,
yeah.
this is going to be bad.
Clean hit. Walker wasn't having to fight off an offensive lineman. He was going to get there clean, and he got a clean shot on him. But with the rule that was put in place, I don't know, maybe half a decade ago now, no full body weight on quarterbacks. And Davis Mills took the shot, got up, and J.J. Watt up there was like, oof, that one's tough. What are you supposed to do as a defensive lineman? Can't go high, can't go low. It benefited the Texans. And other than that, the Jags pass rush was pretty impotent going through the second half, and it helped the Texans get that win. So 36-29 the final. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans. He talked about Davis Mills and how proud he was of him. And then we'll also hear from a couple of other guys, because a lot of guys had a lot of good things to say, as you might imagine, after a win like that. Kamari Lassiter spoke about Derek Stingley. And then we'll hear from the other side. One of our favorites, Liam Cohen, very upset after the game. You saw it as he took off his headset even before Sheldon Rankins crossed the goal line. And that's a good way to be efficient with your time. You're not winning this game. Just get this thing off before the play's even over, because there's nothing to be done. So he ripped off his headset, threw it to the ground. We'll hear from him in our next segment. And we'll, as I said, from D'Amico Ryans, we'll hear from the winning head coach, losing head coach, and then we'll also hear from one of the star defenders about another star defender, because Derek Stingley's play, that one-handed pick, crazy. If they put together a season's worth of highlights for the Texans, clearly that one is going to make it. I'm sure someone's already in the middle of an edit right now.
Yeah, and the Nico catch on the two-point conversion.
A couple one-handed plays made to help the Texans win the game by a couple of their stars. So we will talk more about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Willie P, I see you. We'll get you here, but let's get to D'Amico Ryans. Coach was very excited. He saw him running down the sideline. I think he was the first to greet Sheldon Rankins after the clinching touchdown in their 36-29 win. D'Amico was focused on a lot, as you might imagine, throughout that game, as they were getting pummeled early and then the comeback. Big win for his team with the backup quarterback. And here is D'Amico Ryans on Davis Mills and his play.
Davis did an outstanding job of leading the offense all week, and he did it again today to come out and have a pick on the first drive. Right, it's easy to go in the tank, but he bounced back. He kept battling, kept making plays, and you know, he goes for three touchdowns and the one rushing one that we needed the most at the end. So I'm proud of Davis for the way he stepped up, led all week.
And post game from D'Amico, as you might imagine, very jubilant. There's the clip. I think the Texans put it out there. Adam Schefter grabbed and threw it out there as well about the team and their fight. Aziz Ashier had a comment on that, because D'Amico showed the team a clip of a boxer who had lost the ability to use one of his arms. Like early in the morning, I think John said a one-armed boxer. I was like, wait a minute, what? A one-armed boxer he showed? It was a guy who dislocated his shoulder, so he couldn't use one of his arms.
Okay.
I was like, that's what I thought. One-armed boxer? What's that? What's that?
Or, like, couldn't use one of his arms. I was like, so he's, like, paralyzed? No. It's like, oh. Okay.
In the fight, he lost the ability. He knocked the guy out with the arm that he could actually use.
Wow.
And the message was, keep punching. Like, hey, even when things are going poorly, you got to keep going at it. So that was a clip and a fight that resonated with the players, as Aziz Ashir mentioned it.
Did Dan Quinn show that to his team when they punched
Daron Payne had the use of both arms and decided to punch a guy with the helmet.
Now he's got a
1-game suspension, so he won't be able to make the trip over to
can't punch next week.
Yeah, Jalen Waddle, you lucked out. Daron Payne won't be there to punch you in the face. Yeah. Up to Alabama guy, so he might not have done it anyway.
Also, Madrid's not terrible.
Yeah, going to Spain for a trip ain't too bad, right?
But it is, 14 hours of playing time you just
don't have to worry
you just
about.
Missed out on.
But you also miss out on the game check. So that's the game, by the way, guys. You got a compelling game involving the Colts and the Falcons. The Colts,
yeah, one of the best.
Scratched out a win against the Falcons.
Euro game.
Jonathan Taylor may have thrown himself in the MVP race. What everyone who decided to wake up could watch how great he is and why he's the reason the Colts are where they are offensively. Or he's a running back, so you don't give him any real credit, so he won't win it. You just give it to Matthew Stafford because of what he's doing right now. But you got that one, which was compelling, even though the Falcons aren't very good. This week, you got Mariota versus Tua.
I mean,
get excited about it.
I mean, the red hot.
Well,
Miami Dolphins.
It'll be big in Hawaii.
Oh, the Hawaii numbers are going to go.
The
crazy.
Hawaii numbers are now. It'll be very early there.
I was going to say no. I think it'll be late. I think it'll be like 2 a.m.
It'll be so early. It's late.
I think it'll be. Yeah. People just stay up from Saturday night.
Hear about like, hey, everyone in Japan is tuning in to watch Ohtani pitch. Yeah. Will it be the same way in Hawaii, where they stay up all night to watch their two guys go at it?
Luckily, it's a Sunday, so it's not a school night.
Yeah.
I
wonder how that'll play out, the two bad teams, the two Hawaiian quarterbacks.
I forgot what the whatever
time difference is, like 6 hours?
Because I went during March Madness, and I went to Hawaii during March Madness. Not for March Madness, it was just whatever.
Understood.
March. And the 11 a.m. game, like the first games of March Madness, started at like 6 in the morning.
So it says it's currently 6:49 there.
Right now?
Yeah.
So it's 6 hours. No, wait, four.
Four hours. So it'll only be 4 a.m. or 4:20 exactly whenever the game starts.
It's not
awful. So they probably can go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Get a couple hours in and then wake up.
I think 2 o'clock is the like tipping point of
you might as well just stay up.
Yeah, might as well just stay up.
You can, if you decide to go to bed early, maybe at 9, because you want to really be up to watch your two guys go at it.
We are inventing a person that is like still like, hell yeah, I get to watch Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, maybe if it had happened, well, if both teams were good and both guys were playing great, sure. But it's a little later in Mariota's career for people to care that much, but maybe they'll still care because will it be the first time to
sure his family?
Yeah, obviously.
I'm sure, he has high school teammates.
Maybe will it be the first time two Hawaiian quarterbacks have ever faced off against each other?
I'm sure Dylan they'll Gabriel have it. Play.
Yeah, right. Ryan. Dylan Gabriel played Tua, so this already happened. So, so a little of the luster's off of that. Yeah,
that was two lefty Hawaiians.
Yeah, which even made it more unique. Let's get to Willie P here. Last time he called in, I think it was about the Colts owner. He just randomly threw it in at the very end that he liked what she was up to. What's up, Willie P?
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
It's crazy that you called me up for announcing I was a milkman. Dude, that was like a month and a half ago.
Still remember it.
No, that's funny. Shout out Carly, though.
See?
So I just finished actually listening to your Friday podcast. And first things first, you guys were talking about, making a fake email account to watch Fubo again. And you guys should just do what like me and my family did. So, like, I pay for Fubo and I pay for Paramount Plus, of course, because of soccer. Mm-hmm. And like my little brother, he plays for Disney Plus for the year. My other brother plays for HBO Max. My other brother plays for Netflix. And then like my parents pay for ESPN Plus. Like everybody pays for something and then we just share passwords. I mean, that's the best way to do it so that one person's not, footing the entire bill. But so earlier in the season, I was following Keith and following Vanderbilt. And then I know the last 2 weeks, you and Sean, because you have YouTube TV, you can't watch ESPN. So Saturday, I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch Miami. And boy, let me tell you something.
Why would you do that?
Off of GP, they got to fire Cristobal. Just the GP, man. That dude, boy, let me tell you something. I see what the score ended up as, and that doesn't explain the nonsense and the misery they put me through for the first two quarters. I mean, that goofy-ass boy, Carson Beck, man, he's got one of the dumbest faces I've ever seen, boy, turning the ball over, making bad plays, getting sacked, and then he goes sit his goofy ass on that bench with that dumbass. Boy, I just want to throw someone at the damn TV looking at that goofy-ass boy. But, man, Chris Ball got to go. You got Malachi Toney. It's about to be halftime. That dude only touched the ball twice. Let me tell you something. I don't know, what's his nickname? Sweet baby Jesus, little baby Jesus. I don't know what his nickname is.
Just baby Jesus.
Oh, what is it?
It's just baby Jesus.
Oh, just baby Jesus? Oh, okay. Either way, the boy got Jesus in his nickname. Let that man the ball. I mean, there's got to be some booster somewhere. It's like, yo, man, the dude got to touch the ball, you got to go. End of story. Like, I know they sit back thinking that. But last thing, real quick. One thing I liked about the game is that I know that Miami has the issue with the campus being so far from the stadium, and like the tens of fans that actually showed up, they were booing them boys in the second quarter, and you could hear it. And the commentators kept trying to talk over, and I'm like, oh, that's wild. Y'all getting booed by a whole 22 people out here. Hey, you know, Cristobal should be fired off of that alone. But anyways, you guys have a good one. It's been a long time. I'm trying to make sure I call in more often. Sean A. Mace, what it do, baby? Peace,
appreciate it, Willie P. Yeah, I don't want to get too distracted with Miami football on a Texans, as they would say, Victory Monday. But it's a boring brand of football. When he said, I decided to tune in, I said, why would you do that?
Yeah, that was a crazy thing for Willie P to do.
Just the side to watch. Maybe he doesn't know explicitly the history of Miami football and what happens and how the team plays after a disappointing loss. But that first half was to be expected. I've seen enough of these games over my entire life to know that was going to be a slow first half. And when you throw in the crisp ball of it, it was going to be ugly. Yeah, the Carson Beck face is not something I particularly enjoy, particularly when things go poorly. There's always a little head to the side, down, like, oh, you know, what are you going to do? It's not the Cam Ward vibes. I'll just say that. And the Texans will see Cam Ward coming up here on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, that's touchdown recipient, receiving touchdown haver.
Carson Beck.
Yeah. Dual threat. Triple threat.
He almost fell down.
Almost unabated. Yes, to the end zone.
When he caught the ball, he almost slipped
and fell. Almost fell down.
Yeah, yes. So
I don't think he like broke into like a sprint. He was so open.
Yeah, it was a wet field, but still I was fearful from the moment he caught it that he would fall down. The game was scoreless at the time, with about 2 minutes to go in the game.
Oh, we were commenting. No one had any action on it, but we're like, what a gross game. Just like seeing it in the corner, just being like, that's disgusting.
And he mentioned,
and I'm watching Oregon, Iowa, and I'm like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, both gross, but at least you can convince yourself top 25 matchup. Defensives are playing hard. I don't want to get more involved. I didn't even pay for the opportunity to be miserable because I knew. So I just watched it in less than above board ways. At different points, I was focused on other stuff because why make myself miserable on a Saturday when I don't have to? We'll get the CFP rankings tomorrow. The ACC does ACC things very late in the night. Two ACC teams who were, I won't say in prime position, but at least were heading towards a chance to probably play in the ACC title game. They still have a shot, but Louisville lost on a fourth and goal from the three. I think Cal went for it in overtime to win the game. Little zip route. Guy was open, got in the end zone. Cal wins, and then Wake Forest lost to Virginia. Chandler Morris gets hurt. That was an ugly football game that Virginia has played almost the entire year except for the game where they beat FSU, and they finally got. They're playing with this all year where we're going to be in a game against not a very good team. We're going to squeeze one out and win again. This time they didn't, so who knows who's going to play for the ACC title. Right now it could be Duke and Georgia Tech. Who knows? But either way, that's college football. We'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow. We'll get more sound because thanks, Willie P, for the call. I did want to get to Liam Cohen here. Let's play Liam Cohen. Liam Cohen's on the other side of the equation. The sound that we will never toss away is when he says Duval in a weird way.
Duval.
There it is. He was asked, as you might imagine, about what happened in the second half, particularly in that fourth quarter. Had control, 29-10, and it all fell apart. Here's the Jags head coach on how it all went wrong.
Definitely some probably disbelief. You know, I mean, you're like, you got a 19-point lead, and you can't hold on to it. And that's disappointing. You know, that's really disappointing against an in-division opponent on the road where you're controlling the game for the majority of it, with all three phases having an impact. But, you know, I don't think we forced the punt in the second half, which was obviously hard when you're when they're trying to play catch up. They're throwing it, and then when they were able to go and run it on that long last drive, they were able to run it. And, you know, that was something that obviously hurt us.
Duval.
So, oh, he did a sign-off like college coaches do.
I don't know that. He's not Russell Wilson.
Go Tiger.
Let's ride. He didn't do that.
Duval.
Yeah. none of that, although Russell Wilson had a chance after Jackson Dart suffered his concussion. Did not, as the Bears somehow win another game. Shout out to Joe George. But so we're talking about the Jags and what happened to them. I don't feel like they controlled that game, even when they had a 29-10 lead. It's just that the Texans continued to make mistakes. But when the Texans stopped making, well, the Texans kept making mistakes. But when they stopped making all the mistakes, then you saw how poorly the Jags were actually playing. As you heard him say, they couldn't get him off the field. The Texans, four drives, four scores in that second half. The Jags did next to nothing offensively, and then even their defense didn't make any plays. So it all came together for a big comeback for the Texans. The Jags aren't good. Thankfully, the Texans found a way to win that one, because getting swept by that Jags team, for all the things that have gone wrong this year for the Texans, getting swept by the Jags the way they're playing would have been terrible. They didn't have Brian Thomas. They didn't have Travis Hunter. Jacoby Myers is one of their top receivers, and he just got traded to them. Parker Washington, of course, he had a big day. But the reason Parker Washington's more involved is because their top two guys aren't there. So they weren't good. They were banged up. But, of course, no sympathy there because the Texans were more banged up. And thankfully, that fourth quarter happened. So we don't have to live through a season sweep of the Jags. I don't get into online fights with teams' fan bases. But for anyone who does do that, it would have been rough. If you had been bleep-talking Jag fans all week long, or really just because they're Jags fans all season long, to have lost to them twice in the fashion that would have occurred would have been tough. But not to worry, the Jags allowed you back in it and you took full advantage. So we got the Titans up next. We will see about the health of the team as a whole. Love to get Titus Howard back, because as much as Trent Brown stood up and did his part, I don't want to see it again. I think there's a diminishing returns thing. Like, yeah, Trent Brown had it going for one game. But do I think Trent Brown can hold up over the course of several games? No. Just like, it's the same thing with backup quarterbacks. You give him a couple. Like, Davis Mills, great. Great fourth quarter. I don't really want to see him against the Titans on the road. So if CJ's good enough to go, please let him be back. And hopefully we get good news on Jalen Petrie, who was not available to play either. So the Texans did a remarkable job in that comeback with a couple of key contributors not playing. Let's hope to get those guys back, and let's hope to get to 5-5. All right, we'll go to break with that. Hour one is over. If you want to jump in, 713-780-3776. Of course, there's still things to hear from when it comes to the Texans, or at least guys to hear from. Kamari Lassiter, we'll talk about Derek Stingley. We'll get to that at some point in the second hour. And then we'll get into what else happened this weekend, because one particular person in the city said this: we got punked. Who said it? Who was he talking about? And how did that team respond? We'll talk about that when we come back.